Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Hello, and welcome to another bonus edition of the Iditapod. Maybe the last one for this season, who knows? But we are certainly done with the full episodes of the Iditapod. We appreciate everyone listening. And appreciate folks who are still even going back and listening to the 2019 Iditapod episodes. I'm your host, Casey Grove. I'm Casey Grove, by the way, and I'm your host, Casey Grove. This one is another extended interview, and this is with Nicholas Petit, the Girdwood musher who scratched from the 2019 Iditarod after having led for quite a bit of the race. And this is sort of a first. We haven't really gone outside the Iditapod's main team of reporters, but this interview is conducted by Mark Thiessen with the Associated Press in Alaska. Nick Petit was back home in Girdwood, and Mark had reached out to him to, I think, talk to him about some questions that people had after the race about what happened with Nicholas Petit. You might remember that Nick had been leading the race, was headed out of the Shaktulik checkpoint on his way to Koyuk. There's usually some sea ice that has to be crossed during this leg of the race, and his dogs kind of quit on him. And there were reasons that he had given for that, one being that the dogs had a bad memory from the previous year when they got lost on the sea ice for a while during a ground storm. And your life, Seth Olsen, was able to slip past and win. Nick ended up finishing second. But basically, he says that there were some bad vibes maybe left over from that. So Nick is answering a lot of those questions. He kind of defends his decision-making as far as whether he was resting in checkpoints or outside checkpoints and how much he was resting them. There was certainly some criticism, at least on Twitter, that some folks had about whether he had pushed the dogs too much. And you'll hear in this interview, he kind of refutes that and says that really the dogs were running pretty fast, and tired dog teams tend to not be running that fast before they quit on a musher. They'll slow down, for instance. And so he has maybe some other factors that played a role there. I don't want to speculate what happened. I wasn't out there on the ice, but I can kind of guess that maybe it's somewhere in between that. Mental fortitude in some cases comes from physical fortitude and not being tired. And certainly having some bad memories about a certain section of trail, that could definitely play a role. And as Nick said, there was a little bit of a squabble among dogs on the team right before they stopped running the first time. And that all together kind of led to the dogs wanting to quit the race. So this interview audio actually comes from a video that Mark shot. And obviously here on the podcast, we're only going to have the audio version of that. So just to explain, when you hear dogs panting into the microphone, that's because there are dogs panting into the microphone. They're just surrounding Nick Petit on a couch. And he says some of their names, but I can tell you just from watching the video, there's just this rotating cast of characters that come in and check out how Dad's doing, as he calls himself, in regards to the dogs. Lots of dogs on a couch with Nicholas Petit in this interview conducted by Mark Thiessen of the Associated Press.
So to get to leave Shaktulik, you have to get to Shaktulik, right? And some teams stop on the way to Unaklik, and a couple teams didn't. And if you look at the in and out of, the checkpoint times and stuff, you can see who does what. So I went all the way there with a plan to probably break up the sea ice run into more even runs. Some teams stopped 20 miles short of Unaklik. I got to Unaklik and went. So that gave me a 20 more miles of, I could, you know, you see what I mean?
Right.
You chop some from one end, you add it to the other end.
Right.
So we get to Shaktulik, and they look amazing. Like, I've never even thought a dog team could look that awesome there. And these guys have been looking great the whole way. So take off out of there with the plan of staying at the cabin, same cabin we stayed at last year. And we had a really good run last year all the way up to there. And then I wanted to go into the area that we had a tough run last year with a fresh, well-rested dog team. So I had a lead, yes, but I was going to use it to re-energize even more than we were.
So, I mean, you had, at one point, it was a good five-hour lead. So you were
able to that's on paper. It's not really a five-hour lead. It was really a two-hour lead. Five hours in and out of a checkpoint doesn't mean that somebody's not camping just right outside your checkpoint.
Right. So, but you were going to use your healthy lead to rest your dogs and then make the final push for Nome, right?
Well, I wanted a healthy, rested dog team to leave the cabin, which our really poor run started last year. I mean, it was a good run. They did awesome, but it was more than we expected. So I knew that, you know, these dogs have memories. They're very smart animals. If we go by a turn they used to take and they look at the turn like, hey, aren't we supposed to go this way? So I didn't want to leave Shaq Tulik and have that 14 miles extra before dealing with the part we had a problem with last year. So I went through just like I did last year, and I was going to camp at the cabin. We just didn't make it to the cabin. But they loped. I have screenshots of the GPS tracker, and it shows 10.7, 11.5 or something like that.
Miles per hour.
Yeah, and the dog team that's tired doesn't go 11 miles an hour right before it comes to a stop, like we hit a wall. But they were not looking weird at all. Like, there's nothing wrong with the dog team except they were going really, really fast and then stopped. But so what leads to a stop is not a dog fight. A dog fight is a big deal. We don't want a dog fight that's holes in dogs, that's injuries, that's things that, you know, no musher wants. And it wasn't a dog fight. It was this kid here. He's 2 years old. And
let me pan down. And yeah. This is which dog?
This is Joey, my little knucklehead here. He's 2 years old and happens to be the only boy on the team that's still a boy. And then over there is Danny. He's playing with Tyler right now. And Danny's a puppy. He's just 16 months old. And he was amazing the whole race. He did so great. I was really kind of really proud of the kid, you know, super smooth trotter. When we went fast, he looked like the rest. And when he poops like the rest, he has to slow down to go to the bathroom. And they slow down, they go to the bathroom, and they get back to it. Well, he slowed down once along the trail, and Joey picked on him over it. And, you know, we got over that. Hey, Joey, leave him alone. Go down the trail some more. You know, prior runs, just during the race. And Joey picked on him a little bit more. Joey had been in lead all season, so maybe he didn't like not being in lead. I just gave him all opportunities to be up front for once. Well, I mean, probably my fault for not switching the order, maybe, putting somebody else in front of Joey, somebody who wouldn't try to tackle. But, because, you know, a girl slows down and they don't try to tackle. They try to say hello. Young male in front of him, he's like, what are you doing? What's going on? And so he did that a little more than I wanted. And I, Joey, that's enough. And you see these dogs, I raised my voice a little bit, and they're all like, oh boy, that's not normal. I try to be as calming and collected with my dogs as possible all the time. So they heard an upset daddy, and I mean, we can't really have them do the interview, but they probably tell you something about they remember what happened last year. They remember that we didn't have a fun run, which every run should be a fun run. Well, we didn't have a fun run through the storm going the wrong way last year at all. So there was no dogfight, and we did not slow down like a tired team would. We just came to an abrupt stop after going really fast. And so, you know, that's the answer to that.
So I guess when the abrupt stop happened, was that when you said to this dog to knock it off? Is that when they stopped? Or
yeah, so he picked on him. I hit the brake, put the snow hook in the snow, walk up there and move a leg over a line because you don't want to run him with a leg over a line or something like that. So, you know, you just fix your minor tangle and then you go again. You pick up your snow hook. All right, let's go. And, well, they didn't go. What's going on here? You guys ready? Let's go. And no, we're not going anywhere. They're not looking at me upset or nothing. They're just like looking in the air and smelling the air. And I saw in the morning the waves are right there, so I don't know if that maybe might have freaked them out too. But it was just one of those things. It was like, well, what do you do now? So.
So I mean, what was going through, let me ask, do that. So what was going through your mind at that point? Was it, you know, okay, I can wait this out, you know, we'll wait another 10 minutes and they'll be ready to go? I mean, you know, or was last year starting to come into your mind? Or?
Yeah, that's the first time that last year had a real effect on me for this year, because I mean, I thought about what happened last year on the way. I was like, I'm going to have a well-rested dog team to deal with this area that they probably don't have a fond memory of. Well, this year, once we stopped there, and they won't even go to the cabin nest right there where that run started last year. That's where the wrong turn starts, you know. I mean, wrong turn's further down the trail, but the run starts there. So that's a landmark, that's a big giant rock is with a cabin, and well, they know where they are. So I started thinking, what do I do about this, you know? I have my straw that's intended for use at the cabin, but I don't seem to be going to the cabin very much. I try switching the dogs around and same outcome, you know? And I didn't even try to put the puppy in lead at that time, because he's just so immature, he doesn't really know how to be a lead dog. So switching him around didn't work. You don't stop where your dog team says to stop. I grabbed my bale of straw and I walked another 100 yards and said, this is where we're going. Come on, guys, you know, and they had no problem doing that. But that's not how you're going to get to a finish line, carrying a bale of straw in front of your dog team. So I stopped at that spot, and that's a mile before the cabin or so on the left side of the trail, and bedded him down and acted like we were just at a planned stop from here on. You know, I was like, okay, well, we're going to do about 4.5-5 hours of rest here, and then we'll go to the cabin. Unless you leave out of here like cannonballs with no issues, and we just go. Well, after 4.5 hours or so, they weren't moving. It wasn't happening. Okay, well, what do you do then? I have some dog teams coming behind me. A lot of times the dog team going by will get your dogs going that way. Well, they don't care what they're up to. Yeah. There goes Pete. Just looked really good, I have to say. His dog team looked awesome. Then Yor came by a little while later, and he stopped and gave me a hug, and he tried to get us going. He grabbed the lead, he grabbed the line behind Denny, and at that point I tried to put him in lead already, and gee, sure, ha, but he didn't know how to get on the trail and go down that trail. So, we weren't moving. So we went back to the straw. And give him a little bit more time, and then I figured, well, we're not going to hang out in this wind. None of this is productive at all. So I noticed whenever I'd be in front of them, whenever they would bunch up, they would go. But that's a tangle and a mess, and you don't want to run down this trail with a tangle. So I made a bunch of dogs without a tangle by making what's called a fan formation. Fan formation, just like it sounds. It's just dog team, and just a bunch of dogs, and a bunch of dogs in front of them, versus pairs. Fan formation, Danny here, he's the one that was in lead of the fan formation, and we went down the trail at a really good pace for the mile to the cabin. They looked like they were gonna go right on by it, but that's not something that you try to go into wide open, breezy, long run still. But you don't go there with the assurance that, you know, your dogs have the mental capacity to do it. Puppy in lead, fan formations, breaking the rules anyways. And go back to the cabin. And I mean, pulled into the cabin.
We're getting some more.
Okay.
Allie Zirkle. And Susan Butcher.
Allie and Susan?
Yeah, and Libby Riddles.
Okay, yeah. Nice. So we talked to Libby after you scratched, and she had some nice things to say. I don't know if you saw the article, but she had, basically, whatever happened, it can happen to anybody, and if anybody's going to come back from it, it's you. So.
Well, I like Libby a lot. And you might have noticed my dog box is her dog box. It says Libby Riddles, I did Rod Champion.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
So we're at the fan formation. They're starting to move toward the cabin, but you don't want to keep them in that fan formation.
I don't want to keep going with that fan formation. I don't want to keep going and go by a safe spot, a very safe place to be. And so we'll go to the cabin and we'll rest some more, and then we'll decide in the morning. We'll try to go, and if it looks like we should, we'll continue. But if it looks like we shouldn't, we'll just stay at the cabin. So I woke up, I think around 10 or something in the morning, and off we went. So this is 14 hours after we stopped, really, I think.
So this is like midday Monday now, about 10 a.m. Monday.
Yeah, I think it's Monday. I don't know. I don't keep track of the days very well. But so same fan formation, off we go. And they look okay going, but puppy in lead, not staying on trail. I'm not going to gee and haw him all the way across. That's just going to mess him up for the rest of his career. And I didn't feel the need to keep on switching them and show them that we don't know what we're up to. I just want to come up with a plan, and that's the plan, and so be it. So when I hit the sea ice after leaving the cabin with the fan formation that was moving, but not quite straight, a little bit punchy on the sides and stuff, and you want to stay on the good part of the trail, I just, Anna, thank you. That's enough. I went back to the cabin, and I was going to just mush back to Shaktulik at that point and be at a checkpoint and not necessarily have to push a button and pull out of a race, but, you know, at least go back to the checkpoint. They didn't have any interest in running any direction over there. Most dog teams would go back to a checkpoint. We went to the cabin. They had no problem going back to the cabin. And got there. And I'm at a cabin. There's not a bunch of food here. There's not a bunch of supplies. And there's still a long ways to go that way. I let them in the house. And there's another you don't do during the race. It's part of the rules. The dogs can't go in the house, because otherwise you have a house with 1,000 dogs in it. That doesn't work, you know. So anyways, we just started licking our wounds inside the cabin.
So at that point you knew you were out.
When I brought the dogs inside, I grabbed my GPS tracker and I pushed the button. Well, as soon as they go inside the house, it's the end of your race. I mean, they might have had a penalty or whatever, but I can't expect mushers behind me to bring me dog food when they have a heck of a trek in front of them. Even if they brought me dog food for me, they will probably need it anyways. So nobody tried to bring me anything, and that's fine. Didi John Rowe woke me up in the morning with a back scratch and a hug and shared a tear, and then she wasn't able to bring me dog food either. She was on the snow machine with her husband, but she had been told I had not pushed a button yet, which I don't know how long it takes for communication to get across. But So she made a phone call. As soon as I told her, I pushed the button, I'm done. She called the checkpoint. Send dog food right now. So she sent dog food. You know, yep. Or they send dog food to us. And we weren't out or starving or anything. You know, we just might as well fill them up before the snow machine trip home. So
how did it feel to have to take the dogs off by snow machine?
Well, it's not how we want to travel. I'm always the guy that says the snow machines should stay off the trail a little more. It's more fun with just dogs on those trails, you know, but I felt like these guys are taking time out of their day to help me get home safely. And I felt, you know, too bad, so sad, but still got my dogs. And I don't feel that we did anything that made anything worse from last year. And I feel like it told me, I should have probably done this before this year, go show them that place differently, but I didn't really think about it. Turns out mushers, back in the day, Susan Butcher, Rick Swenson, plenty of others would go over there and just go from Unicleet all the way to Nome before the Iditarod, show them the place. It's a pretty good idea. I used to do that for Copper Basin. I used to go train over there, and then we started doing really well. I scratched at Copper Basin too once. Most people thought that dog team was done. That dog team, the rest of the season, had the best performance of its career, and we won the next Copper Basin, and the next one. So, scratching isn't always a bad thing. It's just people have to understand the reasons behind it.
What did you think when you saw Pete pass and then your? I mean, did you get like flashbacks to last year at that point, because you hadn't scratched yet?
I had a feeling this wasn't going to go like it had been, and so I'm a realist, you know. I saw Pete go by and I said, good luck, man, good luck. Then Yor stopped and gave me a hug and tried to help me go, and thank you. Didn't see much of Jesse or the other guys, but that. Just because you're having a bum run doesn't mean that the others aren't having a good run and should get a little credit for it, you know, so.
Do you feel like that area of Alaska is a curse for you?
I wouldn't say it's a curse for me. I just had a bad time last year and lingering effects of the bad time this year. And I didn't even have any anxiety to go in towards there. I felt confident that these dogs, look at these dogs flying. I actually put the drag mat down because once my GPS said 14, I thought, man, that's a little too much. So I put the drag mat down and then we went back to more like 11. On the GPS, on the trackers, it shows smaller numbers because it's averages over distance. But, I mean, I was pretty excited. Whew, look at that. We had a great time all the way to right there.
So what do you, I'm gonna do a break point. Oh, sorry, can we go ahead and start over there?
Yeah, sure. Anybody that wants to write an article about how I'm gonna get rid of any of the dogs that were with me, well, is gonna quickly get discredited altogether, because there's no way that any one of them isn't gonna stay with us. And I have a 90% guarantee that all of them will be on the team next year. There's no way that this is any type of a reason to get rid of what I consider my children, the dogs I raised. Yeah, I have a few more at home, but I don't have that many dogs, and even if I did, I probably wouldn't, you know? So, no, I won't get rid of them. They're the most important thing in my life. And no, I don't hold it against them. And yes, I think that they will pull through this, no problem. we just have to think of the psychology involved a little bit, you know. So.
And what do you say to people who are saying that the dogs were running too hard and that's why they stopped?
Well, they sure were running fast, but so a tired dog team doesn't go that fast. Somebody that wants to criticize my run-rest schedule doesn't really have the access to the tracker information that shows my rest outside of checkpoints. My rest outside of checkpoints is no shorter than the others in the checkpoints. My dogs rest at outside of checkpoints way better than they would listening to a helicopter and an airplane land around the checkpoint all day long. And one after the other, people wanting interviews, one after the other, people wanting an autograph. I mean, they're great to have the people there. It's really good. But there's not space enough in my race day or at the checkpoint for all of this. Like, if we all stayed at every checkpoint, we couldn't use Roan. We wouldn't fit. If we all stayed at every checkpoint, Eagle Island, well, they'd need to send a big bulldozer over there and clear off a couple acres. And that just can't happen. So there's lots of benefit to not resting on the trail. But I guess the downfall is people think you're not stopping. I'm stopping plenty.
And there's no maltreatment of the dogs.
I look at them. Are you upset with me, Susie?
Oh, hi.
Yeah, you're so pissed off. So, yeah.
So that was Nicholas Petit, the Girdwood musher who had to scratch from the 2019 Iditarod, the second place finisher in 2018. Talking about what happened in this year's race between Shaktulik and Koyuk that led him to scratch, that interview conducted by Mark Thiessen of the Associated Press. Just a quick note, there was a cut there. There was actually a couple edits in the interview audio, but one cut in particular, it sounded like Nick was getting a little defensive about a question that's maybe not included in the audio, but I can only assume that the question had to do with whether or not he was going to keep all the same dogs from his team this year, or whether or not he held it against them that they quit on him this year, something like that. But I think he's responding to any sort of idea that he might not keep all of those dogs. And if you didn't hear, he sounded pretty adamant that he's keeping them all. Again, Nicholas Petit, Girdwood musher, being interviewed by the Associated Press's Mark Thiessen. We certainly appreciate Mark and the Associated Press letting us use that audio. I would say stay tuned for another episode of the Iditapod, but this might be the very, very last one for the third season. We will most likely see you again next season. Stay tuned for more Iditapod. Thanks for listening.